Hi, this is Tyson Brown with the NSTA Press. This marks our second installment of NSTA Press Behind the Books. Today I'm talking with Tomas Bunk, illustrator for Quantoons Metaphysical Illustrations, and Arthur Eisencraft, one of the book's authors. Quantoons is a compilation of 58 contest problems that ran between 1991 and 2001 in Quantum Magazine, a collaboration between the U.S. and Russian scientists that was published by NSTA. Tom, Arthur, welcome.
Yeah, hi. Glad to be here. Hi.
Arthur, what kinds of problems will readers find in Quantoons?
Well, they're physics problems, but they're all preceded by a literary quote, which tries to get people to see how physics relates to literature and poetry and things like that, or music. And then the problem takes a physics principle and asks, a problem which you might find in textbooks as a way to introduce it, and then quickly spins into something a little bit different. So, for instance, in the pendulum problem, most textbooks deal with how does a pendulum go back and forth, but in the Quantoons, what happens is that the pendulum is actually filled with water, and the water drips out,
right.
And what happens to the period of the pendulum as the water drips out of the pendulum, that's something which most books don't do. So it's those twists which make the problems both challenging and fun.
So is it always an additional variable, or are there other kinds of twists?
No, it's usually looking at your physics from a new perspective. These problems were created to challenge the best students in the world in high school, but what we found is they challenge undergraduates, they challenge graduates, teachers, professors, because they do look at phenomena in a slightly different way.
Yeah, and I can say from my foray through the book that the problems are tough. Knowledge of physics, algebra, and often calculus is required. Where did you find them?
Well, actually, Larry Kirkpatrick and I were coaches and academic director for the International Physics Olympiad, the United States involvement. So some of these were problems which we used partially to challenge the best kids in the world. And also, you know, through our teaching experience, we've used these and come up with new twists and from our coursework and things. Because of the necessity to understand some physics, each problem is actually preceded by an introduction to the physics to kind of lay the groundwork. So if somebody doesn't know physics,
right,
but they're interested, they might be able to read, understand, learn some physics, and then probably get to the first or second part of the problem, and then say, ooh, the third part is a little too deep for me.
Well, in addition to the introductions, the problems are accompanied by the illustrations. And, Tom, the illustrations are beautiful, and they're quirky, and they work wonderfully as metaphors for the physical concepts. How did you create them? Would you sketch an idea and bounce it off of Arthur and Larry, or would you work it through your own ideas to the final product?
Yeah, well, first I would try to understand the problem, and I would get some physics school books, and I would try to understand it and study it, and by doing that I would make little sketches, and then I would try to get these sketches together into one picture, if possible, and find a scene or a background for that, and then when I would have the whole picture, I would text it to Arthur, and then he would check if the physics were right or wrong. But that was in the very beginning like that, because I made a little mistake in the first one, where the light would bend the physical laws a little bit. And so later on, I knew more the physics, so I didn't have to send it to him first.
Tom, you grew up in Croatia.
Yes.
Did you enjoy science as a kid? Did you study physics then?
Well, we have, actually, when I went to high school, I lived in Germany then, and there you could, at I think 9th or 10th grade, you could make a decision if you want to continue science or you wanted to go into humanities, so that I decided not to continue science because I wasn't very good at abstract thinking, and I could understand things better in visual, so I haven't really got much in the school about science, but I was always very interested in science. It's just the way how it was taught I didn't really like very much, because I'm really very amazed about physics and all these things. So it's in the school, it was a little bit too dry for me. In this quantoons, there's a lot of other things that are as important as the science.
What I think happened was that, first of all, Tomas did have to understand some physics, but unlike the traditional textbooks, where the illustrations all look the same because everybody has a science background, I turned to Tomas because I wanted somebody who really was not so influenced by what's always been in the books to see, well, what could he do? And he was a little hesitant at first because he said, I don't have a physics background. But in fact, that turned out to make this venture so unique. He was able to not only bring a creativity to each of the physics problems, but also to see, because Tomas is such a creative thinker, to see the physics as a metaphor. Mm-hmm. And that's why in one illustration, I might mention in the problem, in the article, in terms of the physics, something about politics or something about the world or something about this, but he really takes that into other dimensions and says, well, here's a world of scientists, and here's a world of citizens, and here's a world of animals. How do they look at that physics? Mm-hmm. And his sense of literature, his sense of art, his sense of cultural icons pervade these illustrations, these quantoons, mm-hmm. and provide a depth to the reader and also increase the depth of ways of looking at the physics.
Arthur, you said that he was able to bring a new viewpoint to the problems that weren't existent in the textbooks, and there was something else that he offered in this newest version of quantum problems, and that was Tom had offered commentary about his illustrations. Arthur, when you read those commentaries, did you find any surprises from Tom's notes?
Every one was a surprise. It was a real privilege. We rarely get a chance to ask somebody about the process by which they create things, or what's going through their mind when they create things, and to actually ask Tomas, could you write a couple of paragraphs saying what were you thinking of, or what does this mean to you, and then to be able to read about the thought process of an artist as they conceive of a work is something which we rarely get to do. Occasionally you can read about other artists, they write autobiographies, they write about their artwork, but I was certainly excited about that when I started reading them. Now don't forget, Tomas and I had discussed some of these illustrations, and occasionally he would send me one, and he'd ask me if I liked it, and I would say I like it, and he said, you know, I mentioned what I liked about it, and he said, you're not looking carefully enough, and then he would hang up, and I'd have to study this some more in order to find out, what was he talking about? And oh my goodness, who knew? Even though we had done that, I'm reading these things, and I'm saying, I had no idea. I mean, certain things, because, again, cultural icons, when you see Faust as the scientist, you know, you recognize Faust right away. You recognize the Wagnerian diva right away. But there were other things. When you're crossing the river in a boat and you want to find out how far downstream you get, which is a very typical physics problem, I didn't notice at first that one side of the river was life and one side was death. Mm-hmm. And the crossing the river is living your life. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that every one of the descriptions of the quantoons gave me another insight and surprised me. There were just parts I was just so overwhelmed by really what he was thinking of when he did it, which is the pleasure of art, because I would, as I keep coming back to the quantoons and looking at the illustration, I keep seeing new things. And I think that that's the power of art. Just like as I keep looking at the physics problems, I keep seeing new things, and that's the pleasure of physics.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the problem with my art drawings was that it was really cluttered and crowded, and there was so much going on that many people probably gave up right away. They just saw some gags, and then they just were confused. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was really wonderful to write something about it, so to introduce somebody who is viewing this artwork to, you know, to get into the picture and then understand things, and makes it so much more richer. And, yeah, I was very thankful that I could do that, because it was for me also very good to write about it, because I forgot a lot about it. But by writing about it, I really, even I was surprised that there were so many, and I just didn't write everything. I just wrote, because I didn't have enough space, so I just wrote a couple of sentences.
Well, that's fascinating. So even as you were looking at the illustrations, you were remembering things.
Yes, and I was even surprised myself that I could get all these connections together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what was, it's really the creative thing that nobody has control of. It's just all these things that come, they would come to me out of the blue, and I would read and I would be interested in things, but they would just come and I would just pin them down. And so for me, it was really an adventure to write about it, and I'm very happy about it.
In retrospect, were any of the connections just too confusing even for you? You know, you had done them, but did you look at them and say, what was I thinking?
Yeah, it was. It took some time to get back into it, and because it is a little bit, some things are a little bit far out, stretched, and but I could discover so many things that I either I forgot or I didn't even know. You know.
I'd like to add that for those people who like to deconstruct and to understand, when you look at the illustration, you can see that the Tomas, his paragraph description helps somewhat, but also you can see his inspiration coming. His inspiration was grounded in the physics, but often came from the title or from the quotation, and sometimes the literary quotation, which I chose to try to add another dimension to the physics, sometimes helped Tomas to relate to the physics in a different way and to include that in his picture as well.
Yeah,
and
very
so
much, yeah.
You see a real interplay between the literature and the physics and the art.
Arthur, how would you select those quotes?
Oh, that was the most fun. Because what would happen is Larry and I would agree on what the physics problem would be like, and one of us would write and then send it to the other. We'd go back and forth. And then when it was all done, I'd have to find a quote. So sometimes right away I would know the quote and from something I had read. And other times I would have to go to my books and my library, and it would take an hour or two or three to search. And I'm just reading all these books I like, saying, I think there was something in here about colors, or there was something in here about that. And then I also use the computer. I have discs of the great books. So, you know, I could look for something in Shakespeare or whatever. But actually, it was my first use of the Internet, other than for physics communications, was when Jerry Garcia died of the Grateful Dead. I said, I have to pay homage to the Grateful Dead here, and so I need a Grateful Dead quote. And I thought, well, I could sit there listening to all my CDs and try to find one. I said, wait, the Internet is just beginning now, and there are all these Grateful Dead sites on the Internet. Why don't I just go to one of them? And I went to the site, and I said, here's the article. I'm running a physics article. It's about sound and music, and it's about this. Does anybody know of a quote that I could use from Jerry Garcia?
Mm-hmm.
And within a few hours, there was a quote, and it was from Uncle John's Band, down by the riverside.
Right.
And it was perfect. And I said, this Internet's going to be dead.
Oh, that's great. Well, getting back to the problem, hundreds of students and even teachers have submitted solutions to the problems over the years. How often would you receive a novel but valid solution, something you hadn't seen before in your work with the Olympiad?
Well, of course, part of the reason why people like physics is because there's always another angle, another perspective, another way of solving a problem and looking at it. So, yeah, sometimes we would get, well, we always published solutions and gave credit for people who had creative solutions.
Right.
And occasionally we really were surprised by the elegance of the solution. In physics, you can sometimes solve a problem through a traditional technique or through a kind of brute force technique.
Right.
And it might take a page, it might take a page and a half, and then all of a sudden somebody says, oh, I can do that in just three lines, because they see it in a very different way. And so we certainly had those. We had a few contributors whose names appear over and over again because they really love these. But I guess the difference between physics problems and these quantoons and Sudoku problems, which everybody likes so much now, is when two people get known with a Sudoku problem, the solution's exactly the same.
Right.
That's not usually true in physics, and certainly not true in rich physics problems.
Mm-hmm.
That the personality of the person comes through. The physics still has to be correct, but some people solve things graphically, others solve them with equations, others solve them using symmetries, others bring in other fields of physics or math. And so that's why people spend careers studying physics and doing science as opposed to a whole career solving Sudoku problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, both you and Tom had brought humor and philosophy and culture and more into the problems themselves, both in the narrative and in the illustrations. Were these used as clues for the solutions, or were you just creating connections between the relatively dry world of physical laws and this so-called real world?
Well, I think that the connection between the physics and the real world is something which we do in order to engage people, in order to help them appreciate physics. The physics problems usually don't require that sensibility. Mm-hmm. However, once we asked a question specifically to that, and I have to say I was quite disappointed in the responses from our readers. I had showed how over the years the problem of an object thrown across the room or across a field has changed. And in the 1950s, those problems in physics books had to do with bombs and ballistic missiles and mortar shells.
Right.
In the 1980s, those same problems became problems about sports,
sure,
footballs and baseballs and javelins. And in the 1990s, once again, the same physics problem, but now the illustrates were, let's drop in a food package, let's drop in an emergency raft, let's drop an instrument package. And I posed to the readers, the physics readers of Quanta magazine, I said, so do you think it matters whether you ask the problem and give us an example, whether it's bombs or sports or food packages? And a lot of them said, no, it doesn't matter at all.
Hmm.
Now, the physics solution is exactly the same, irrespective of whether you're throwing a bomb or a football or an instrument package.
Right.
But I was surprised and quite disappointed to find out that so many physics people said, no, you can give any of the problems to the kids, and there is no hidden message, because I thought there was, and the article was about, the hidden messages in everything we teach.
But that's why people think very differently, you know. That's why also these illustrations were so enriching, the whole problem, because I would, you know, there would be so many references to other things that make physics part of, you know, a life experience, not something special. It is something that happens all the time, and it's right there in front of everybody. So I think, yeah, illustrations, they were a part of it too, to, you know, enrich this experience. And that's why it was also so much fun to do. Otherwise, if it would be just physics, it would be just very empty, I would think.
Would the readers, Tom, respond to your illustrations with comments that maybe had nothing to do with the physics problem, but just simply with some of the imagery that you were featuring in the illustration?
Well, Arthur has was so great that he arranged an exhibition of my work in the mm-hmm. Museum of Science in New York, and there I got a lot of responses, not from Quantum magazine, but from this exhibition,
mm-hmm.
and people were really writing to me, and they were not, yeah, there were some also, there were physics teachers too,
mm-hmm.
but there were people who really were so excited about the whole philosophical thing, and that I could put in all these different branches together,
mm-hmm.
philosophical and socially and cultural and all these things, and make it into some kind of, I don't know, some kind of really exciting brew. And so some people, they were very excited about it, and but not so much, as I said, from the physic point of view.
Oh, they were probably, at least from Quantum, those folks were probably focused on the solution.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I think that they, you know, it's an interesting thing. We didn't have a vehicle by which we asked them to make those comments.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle was, can you send in a correct solution to the problem?
Right.
I'm sure many, many people really did turn to that, to Tomas's illustration. As soon as they got the magazine, they, you know, what is Tomas up to this month? Let me look to see what his illustration is. While I'm sure that there were other people who skipped the picture completely,
mm-hmm.
and much to their loss, really,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that now maybe they'll go back and spend the time. What we're doing here is we're creating three or four or five different windows by which you may come to appreciate science. You can enter your appreciation of the science through the Quantoon illustration, say, oh, this is a lot of fun, look at this, look at that, oh, that's enjoyable, oh, that's interesting, that's profound, and oh, but there's some science in there. Or you can enter it through the literary quote and say, oh, what is that quote? You can never step into the same river twice, Heraclitus. Well, what does that mean to me, you can never step into the same river twice?
Mm-hmm.
Or you come through it through the creative process by reading about what Tomas said about his illustrations, or you come at it through the background of the physics and the physics problem. Hopefully, whichever window you enter at, you start looking at all of the walls of the room before leaving it.
Mm-hmm. Tom, your illustrations are distinctive, and many readers will recognize the style from your other work for Mad Magazine and Garbage Pail Kids. How would you characterize your work?
Well, I do work on different levels, and for example, for Mad, my work is more aggressive, cartoonish, and grotesque. And for the Garbage Pail Kids, it's another level which is more naturalistic, a level of realistic level rendering, mm-hmm. and it's also very gross and tasteless. And then I do also illustrations for active physics books mm-hmm. with Arthur also. And there, my cartoons are more straightforward. They're also funny, though, but they are more straightforward. Mm-hmm. So these quantoons were really something very special, and that basically that I could put a lot of my own interest into it, mm-hmm. and that was so great about it, and Arthur was really very encouraging me to do that, you know, to just go wild with my fantasy and put in my own things, and that's what made it very special for me, and it's different than any other work that I did. Except when I started doing cartoons in Germany, like 30 years ago or so, my cartoons, they were also kind of not so much gags, but they were also drawings about thinking problems and existential problems and so on. So actually the quantoons are a continuation of this kind of my beginnings.
Hmm.
And yeah,
where was the? Where did you first? Do you remember where you first published a cartoon?
Well, my first cartoons, they were gags, because the other ones I couldn't really get rid. Nobody wanted to print them, so because they were very surrealistic, and so the first ones were really gag cartoons,
mm-hmm.
and then a little bit later I did comics, and this I published in a magazine that's also in Germany, that is like Mad Magazine, and I did a couple of years. I produced comics a lot, and they were a little bit like this American underground comics, but mm-hmm. they were also full with surrealistic and not easy to understand problems, and I don't think that many people really finished them, because they were really very complicated, so... But there were also, I do work on very different levels.
Mm-hmm.
I also paint in oil, so this is also another level.
I had noticed in just reading through the book that there seemed to be there were some genres that were influencing your work, or at least the way I perceived it.
Yes.
In fact, in one, the scene for an earthquake problem, Shake, Rattle, and Roll,
mm-hmm.
features a tsunami whoopsie that reminded me of a Japanese print.
Yeah, yeah.
What were some of the artists and types of art that mm-hmm. influenced your work?
Well, I had the famous Japanese wave of Hokusai, who is mm-hmm. the artist, in another drawing of quantoons, where I copied it, but also there were other things that I used, The Thinker by Rodin,
mm-hmm.
for example, I used a couple of times, and then also Chinese drawings I used in one elevator physics article, I think. Then the Greek statue, Laocoon, I used, the Chirico a little bit, and of course Michelangelo, the divine hand that comes from above, yes. And I had even a Pollock in curved reality. These are like details, but overall I would say that my influences come from artists like Bosch and Bruegel and Steinberg,
mm-hmm.
and old comics and Mad Magazine. So it's a healthy mixture.
That is. I'm sure every reader has a favorite among these 58 illustrations, and I know I do. Do you have any of your own favorites, Tomas?
Yes, one of them is Split Image,
mm-hmm.
which was a very nice project. And the title was Split Image, and because the town I was born in is called Split, and because during that time there was a war with the Serbs and Croats, so it was something very near to me, so I incorporated this whole idea of split and war together with the science problem that was magnifying glass that was broken, so it was really a very nice, I would say, project, and that I liked a lot. And another one is Curved Reality, I like also, because there's a scientist who is measuring the chaos, and he's making out of the chaos geometric figures, and he himself is not finished. His feet are not finished yet, and there's a hand drawing his legs, and so the scientist, you know, doesn't stand on his own feet yet.
So he's creating himself?
Yeah, he's being created, and he's creating himself. So that was one that I liked a lot. But I like them all, so it's very hard to say.
How about you, Arthur? What were some of your favorites?
Well, certainly the first one is always a favorite. Since the first one, you start saying, my goodness, this is going to be a wonderful ride. Where when I first asked Tomas if he could draw one, he said, I don't know physics. And I said, well, how would you draw light? And he said, I would draw it as a superhero because it goes so fast. And then to see that, and actually when you look at the picture, the first view, in fact, this one has light bouncing off mirrors, and there's water in the aquarium, and each mirror is labeled M1, M2, M3, and the light. In another picture, the water is labeled H2O. And Tomas explained to me, he said, you know, I've been looking at physics textbooks in order to help make sure I did it correctly, and I see you like to label everything so you don't get confused. So I put labels in for you. And so that was certainly funny. I guess each one provided a special insight. The clamshell mirrors was interesting because that was about, again, images from mirrors, virtual images, and besides Tomas adding all of these eyes the way we draw them in physics books to the illustration, it also showed the way in which people look at images as actually something traveling through space when in fact nothing's traveling through space. And so it spoke to all sorts of ways that people try to understand images. When the people are looking in the mirror, there's a cubist person looking, but in the mirror they look normal. And there are people going mirrors, people breaking mirrors, people being shocked by seeing the future in a mirror. Just so much intrigue and so much excitement in the pictures.
I like the way that the images is turned upside down, in a sense. Arthur, Tom had described some of the early influences, artists that influenced his work. Can you trace a similar lineage in your work as a physicist and an educator?
Oh, well, I think that we all have teachers who inspired us, and I certainly have teachers who I remember quite fondly because of the way they were able to capture my imagination. Max Dresden at Stony Brook, where I went to school, was just somebody who lived and breathed physics and breathed excitement into everything he ever taught. And then I think I've just been very, very fortunate because through my work with the National Science Teachers Association, through my work with Active Physics and all sorts of other projects, the quantum projects and stuff, I've had a chance to meet lots and lots of teachers who are all very creative in their own ways, and I just keep learning from them and keep finding things out, ways of looking at things. I was at, just last year, I was visiting a middle school in Georgia, and I saw this teacher had a banner on top of her blackboard, and it said, "We are not science students, we are student scientists." And I looked at that and I said, what a wonderful way to change the whole culture of the classroom. And so it's something that I get to then say, learn from. There's somebody, a middle school teacher who probably has not gone to conferences, but, you know, who's really helping, and she inspires me in a way that I guess Max Dresden inspired me as well. So lots of teachers. I've been very fortunate, meeting lots of people, and learning from all of them.
Yeah, it's neat to know how she's empowered her students to be the leaders in the process.
And I can tell people about it when I give talks, and hopefully then her influence carries on to many, many more students than the ones in her class.
How would you like teachers and students to use this book?
I'd like them to let the kids enjoy it. I think that they could certainly be used as assignments and for drawing physics students in high school, and certainly in undergraduate courses it could be a book where it takes the physics and makes it much more interesting in terms of the types of problems that have to be solved. But I think that what I've done in my own classrooms is I would take the illustration sometimes before and sometimes after we had studied a topic, And I would ask people to tell me, what do you see? Then have them interpret it. So when I put an illustration, one of the quantoons, in front of my class, what do you see? You get to hear them relate to the illustration, and you get to hear how they relate to the world. That can shape your instruction. When you do it after you study the physics topics and you put up an illustration, one of the quantoons, then you say, well, what's going on? And they start saying, oh, that must be an electron because it's doing this, and I can see it's being scattered, and so the wavelength changed as well. And you get to see how well do they understand the lesson, and are they able to now take their knowledge of physics and interpret the illustration differently.
Yeah, it sounds like a teaching method you could try with the students after they've done this once or twice where they've interpreted one of Tom's illustrations, maybe with a new problem, we could ask them to illustrate it.
We certainly can, and kids do illustrations, and we should ask the kids to do that. We should ask the kids to make up their own quote, to make up their own poem. You know, I really want the teachers to make it accessible. When I say to a student, what do you see in the illustration? I don't want to just hear about the physics. I want them to say, oh, look at how that person's wearing a red jacket. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, that's a ridiculous shoe. Nobody would wear that shoe. And so all students get to contribute, which they don't do when you only ask them about a physics equation.
Right.
And so they're participating, they're getting involved. Also, if the students read this, I mean, there are quotes by Dante and Aristophanes and Confucius and the Bhagavad Gita and Shakespeare and modern poets, and also, as I said, there's Jerry Garcia and there's Mick Jagger and there's Bob Dylan, and they all have things to say about life, and which is what physics is about.
Mm-hmm. Arthur, Tom, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk to me today. For more information about quantoons, metaphysical illustrations, including a set of sample problems relating to Snell's law, the PNS waves of earthquakes, and how a team of circus clown scientists might describe an elephant, go to www.nsta.org and click on the science store. This is Tyson Brown signing off from the NSTA Press.